You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Joe Moore. Hunger is a problem in the San Joaquin Valley throughout the year. Of course, it's an issue that's at the front of mind for many in this holiday season, as we have two guests with us in our studio today to tell us more about what's happening on the ground in the Fresno area when it comes to food insecurity. We have with us Andy Souza. He is the CEO of the Community Food Bank in Fresno, and Philip Arrow. He is the force behind a new effort to quantify the issue of hunger in the area. It's called Fresno Hunger Count. I want to start with you, Philip. Why did you get involved with this effort to look at this issue in a new way and do this essentially census of hunger in the valley?
Well, it really started with an article in our local newspaper, the Fresno Bee, and it was describing how much hunger there was in Fresno, how severe it was, and how widespread it was. After I read that article, some months went by, and then I donated to the Community Food Bank and engaged Andy Souza in a conversation. And basically what he said was that his organization was doing a lot to get food to people, and there were other organizations doing similar things, but no one really knew how much hunger was out there. And we had a series of conversations after that, and we came up with the idea of doing a survey where we actually interview the people who are in need and let them state what the needs are. So that was the conception of the project.
So you went throughout homes in the Fresno area and interviewed people and came up with some really interesting statistics. Over half of the Fresno Clovis households surveyed experienced food shortages. The cost of additional food to nourish them, $41.5 million. How did you arrive at those numbers, and how did this survey exactly work? Did you survey all households or only certain neighborhoods, or how did you come to that conclusion?
Right. Well, we took the median income of people in various census tracts, and so what we did was we selected the census tracts where the median income was 200% of the level of poverty, federal poverty level, and that's $48,000 for a family of four. So we ended up identifying 75 census tracts. Those were in Pinedale, and then from Shaw south throughout Fresno. So it was 75 census tracts, all based on the median income being 200% of the poverty level or less.
And I want to turn now to Andy Souza of the Community Food Bank. Looking at these numbers, more than 64,000 people, according to a Phillips survey, have empty fridges. 80% of them don't have enough meat, bread, fruits, and veggies. 71% of those individuals have small children and not enough milk. Were you surprised at the numbers that the Fresno Hunger Count came up with?
Joe, no, we really weren't. For the reason is Phil and I engaged very early in this process, and we just kind of put a little more frame around the context as well. We know on a macro level, very large numbers. We know throughout our five-county region, Fresno, Madera, Kings, Tulare, and Kern counties, that one in three children and one in four adults. But when you drill it down to a neighborhood, that's where we lose that information. And so it was very helpful for what Phil and his team did. And those weren't shocking for the neighborhoods they looked at, because as he mentioned, as you're looking at those pockets of concentrated poverty that we know the Brookings Institute has told us about since 2005, what we're seeing is very consistent, not only in the numbers of people, but the high need for your lean proteins, your fruits and vegetables. Joe, when you're in a situation where you're on a very tight budget, it is really easy to get your high-calorie, low-nutritional foods, your macaroni and cheese, your top ramen noodles, your puff sugar cereal. But when you start getting into the fruits and vegetable aisle, it gets a little more expensive, and it's tougher for families to make ends meet there. So, yeah, we've seen consistently on a macro level everything Phil saw really down there on the neighborhood-by-neighborhood, block-by-block, house-by-house analysis.
You mentioned the consistency there, Andy. How have things changed, perhaps, in the last 5 years or so? Has there been any change, or is this just sort of the status quo in many of these neighborhoods, as you said, that deal with the consistent high levels of concentrated poverty?
Well, Joe, I think what we saw is a little bit inconsistent or counterintuitive, would probably be a better term. We went through the tough recession, and we saw a lot of families that would have never expected they were going to be in our lines. We're serving them. Families with two college educations who both lost their job, or one member in the household lost their job and another one was furloughed. So we would consider that was situational. And many of those families have pulled back out. But, Joe, many haven't. And many are still struggling. And hidden in all the discussion is really what we're seeing is a lot of underemployment. Folks just aren't where they were before the recession hit. And so they may not need us every month, but they might need us every other month or every third month or when the transmission goes out or something big happens. So that's kind of the state we're seeing across our region. It's ironically, the urban areas are actually improving, as you can imagine, quicker than the rural areas. The rural areas, obviously impacted by the drought, have really, really struggled in making ends meet in those areas. And so I think we're seeing consistent with that. But one thing that's also telling is that it's not just in those neighborhoods that Phil looked at. You know, we went through and we look a lot at not only the census tract data by census block, but we also look at free and reduced meals throughout our five counties. And, you know, my wife and I live up in the Woodward Park area, and I drive by Valley Oak every day, Valley Oak Elementary School. Never in my wildest dreams would I have imagined that one in five kids at Valley Oak are on free and reduced meals. That's at the corner of Friant and Champlain, just next to Holy Spirit Church there. 20% of the kids, six kids in every classroom, are getting nutritional food assistance through the schools. So it is in every neighborhood. It's woven throughout our community. Where Phil and his folks have really reached out are really those high need, that concentration area. But it's and that's really where the big needs are. But it's in every neighborhood.
That voice you hear is Andy Souza. He is the CEO of the Community Food Bank in Fresno. Also with us today on this discussion of hunger in the Valley is Philip Arrow. He is behind the new effort to quantify hunger in some of Fresno's most distressed neighborhoods. It's called the Fresno Hunger Count. Philip, I asked Andy if there was anything that surprised him in this. Was there anything that surprised you in this process?
Yes, there was. Basically, I had thought prior to the survey that that the hunger was concentrated right around downtown. So you would look maybe north of downtown to the Lowell Elementary School area, maybe east of downtown to the First and Belmont area, and then west of downtown to southwest Fresno. But what we found was that there are concentrations of hunger throughout the city, and it's kind of like a leopard skin. When you look at this, when it's expressed on a map, you see these red spots all over the 75 census tracts that we surveyed. And I want to say at this point that we surveyed census tracts west of the 99 as well as east of the 99. So this is widespread. It goes very wide and it goes north-south as well.
And jumping off on something that Andy mentioned earlier, this discussion of this, the access to food, it's not just about people having enough food. In some cases, we have these this issue of food deserts, neighborhoods where there isn't a grocery store. Maybe there's a corner store that sells liquor and beer and sort of junk foods type snacks, high calorie, not necessarily the most nutritious type of food. How much of that is also a part of this problem in your view?
Well, availability of groceries is a big problem. These grocery chains do their homework as far as the demographics of a given area. They want to be sure that the median income is high enough that people will come in and spend their money, and the grocery store has to be close enough to them to come in. So what you have in many of these neighborhoods is a complete absence of supermarkets. Many of these people, even when they get their paycheck, they can drive to the store, but it may be that they have to put $5 of gasoline in their car because they're going to go to the grocery store and then maybe do a few other things. They're very close to just not being able to get around. They do have an old beat-up car in many instances, or they get around on a bus. But if you've ever shopped and got on a bus, you know they can't carry too many bags of groceries. So the fact that a grocery store is not close is a major item for these people.
Andy, I want to turn that question to you now. A few weeks ago on this program, we did a couple of stories about West Fresno and the challenges it faces and also some of the success stories. One of the success stories was the Kearney Palm Shopping Center. If I remember correctly, you were city manager at the time that opened, and that really has been cited as a success story. And the Food Max there, many thought it wasn't going to be successful. In fact, it's turned out to be one of the best performing stores in that chain. How do you see that the issue of food deserts playing into this? Is that a part of this equation as we look at not just access to food, but also what food people have access to?
Well, first of all, Joe, I thank you for the compliment, but it was prior to my time
it
as city manager.
Prior. Okay.
But you know what? And I want to be fair on that because I'm sure some of your listeners are going to go, no way he was. But I was a city controller at the time, and yeah, that was a great project. I mean, that is one that you know, it's always a struggle when you've got to make a major investment into something like that of limited tax dollars. But the fruit that bore through the redevelopment agency at the time and what we see now is that is a case that I had the opportunity to share with on this issue with. There was a National Hunger Commission, Congressional Hunger Commission, that traveled across the country. And I was lucky enough to be one of the people to speak to them in Oakland earlier this year. And that's exactly one of the things we talked about is the need for public-private partnerships like that to start addressing food deserts. Because at the end of the day, the families we're serving, even in the best of times, have very limited resources. And as Phil mentioned, if you're putting $5, $6, $8 into the gas tank to get you to the Super Walmart in Kerman and then have to drive all the way back to Tranquility or to Firebaugh or to Mendota or wherever you might be, that's just resources that mean you're going to be longer in the, you know, top ramen and the high calorie, low nutrition area rather than your lean proteins or your fruits and vegetables. So, yeah, it's an issue that has gone nationwide, has a lot of discussion, Joe, and it's something that all of us in the food, you know, food banking world or the food assistance world understand that we as food banks, we're not going to solve hunger by ourselves. Passing out a bag of food isn't going to solve hunger. It's critical and it's crucial for the families we serve, and I don't ever want to diminish that. But it's going to take more of a holistic approach. It's got to be the economics these families are dealing with. It has to be access to reasonably priced nutritional food. So, yeah, Joe, food deserts are something that are on the radar for most of us, and it's something that, especially in the kind of urban-rural split that we have here in our region, make a big impact on some of these families.
How difficult is that on that urban-rural split that you just mentioned? How difficult is it for an organization like yours to meet the needs of the people out there? Just logistically, you mentioned that in some cases the urban area is coming back, but the rural areas are struggling. We have the drought. We have the high farm-related unemployment due to the drought. Talk about those challenges that you're facing there, because you cover a huge area and many of these communities, very small, very rural, very remote. Yeah. And what is your outreach to them? Yeah.
Well, Joe, you're spot on. I mean, it's an ironic way we have to do business, but we always have to remind ourselves at the end of the day, a child who's hungry in Mendota or Cantua Creek is no different than a child that's hungry in Southeast Fresno. It's a hungry child, and we've got to figure out a way to get there. And thankfully, you know, what we've been able to do is really build strong relationships in those communities. If you circle back to the 2009 drought, and that was when I was still at City Hall, the model that was used, and it was a very efficient model, was to get all the food in Fresno and then take it out to Mendota or take it out to Firebaugh or take it out to Tranquility with a lot of Fresno volunteers. And you were literally a little bit of the cavalry coming. And we just felt like that wasn't a good model because it didn't help build community sustainability. So we were real intentional this year with the drought relief to want to make sure we're partnering with existing organizations in Orange Cove, in Huron, in San Joaquin. And what that's helped do is just build their infrastructure as well so that they're equipped that once the drought's over, because it will end, the economy isn't great in those communities. As you know, if you think of Firebomb Mendota, you're still talking persistently 18 to 20% unemployment, even when we have full cooperative weather and cooperative water systems. It's still a tough economy in those regions. So it is, but we know, Joe, going at the end of the day that we just build a model that serves that area. That's where we're at. We don't have the luxury of being San Francisco with 49 square miles all self-contained, but we have great donors, we have great agricultural support, we have great business support that help us build this infrastructure to make it happen.
Andy, you mentioned agricultural support. I know there's been some talk out there of some legislation that could potentially make it easier for agriculture companies to donate food and things like that. Does your organization have a position on that in any way?
Yes, and the position is yes.
Joe, and tell us a little about what that involves.
Sure, Joe. Let me frame that discussion a little bit as well, because when I started at the food bank, we were receiving about 3 million, distributing about 3 million pounds of fresh produce, and a lot of that was because it's busy, and I've discovered through the course of life, you tend to think that folks see life as you see it. We're food banks, and people should just know that we're food banks, but what we discovered is the agriculture community is very giving if you ask, and you just have to remember to ask. And so we started asking, and we've been able to grow from 3 million pounds a year of fresh produce to last year it was just over 17 million pounds. And that was the vast majority of that, 15.5 million pounds, were literally donated, where folks either said, come pick it up or we'll deliver it to you. We might have a little bit of freight cost, but that's donated itself. The legislation we talked about has been at both the federal and state level, and that is the ability for folks to get an accelerated benefit for lack of a better term, for donating produce. The challenge is most of the laws are written around corporate structures where they're accrual-based accounting and it's very inventory-based, and there's a lot of paperwork that's done that your average farming entity doesn't do. They're cash-based accounting. And so what we're hoping to do is maintain the intent and the spirit of the law, just turn it in a manner that makes it available to your smaller growers, your smaller farms, your smaller packing houses that don't have a reason to be on an accrual-based accounting system for their taxes, but yet have a philanthropic heart. They want to make a difference, and they want to add value to our community.
Turning back now to Philip Arrow of Fresno Hunger Count, we're talking about this new data that's out, that his survey looked at many census tracts in the Fresno Clovis area, and of the ones they looked at, over half of the households in those census tracts surveyed experienced food shortages. What's the next step for you, both in terms of your data and addressing the problem your data uncovered?
Well, thank you, Joe. Basically, we have contacted and reported our data to the Community Food Bank and many of the other organizations that provide relief food. And so what we intend to do with that is that we report to them where some needs are that they may not be taking care of now. And so we're hoping that the existing organizations can deliver food to new locations or deliver to the same locations but at different dates, because we're identifying when the food is needed, where it's needed, the types of foods that are needed, an amount for each type of food every month in 75 census tracts. So these organizations, when we give them this information, we can show them where there's a need within, for example, 2 miles of their headquarters, let's say. And so it's a way to enable these organizations to meet needs that are not being met now. And I've had discussions with Andy and with the people at the Central Valley Community Foundation about this notion that, okay, we've identified the needs, but now we're going to have to find a way to get funding to increase the capacity of these organizations so that they can increase their distribution, even if they do get free food from some source. So that's kind of the next steps. And I would like to, at this point, urge our listeners to increase the amount of help and support they're giving to Community Food Bank, and perhaps if they belong to a church that has a pantry, to increase that. These are needs. This 26 million pounds of food are needed in addition to what all these organizations are doing now. And so we need to increase our support of all these organizations. It can be in some instances, some families don't have much money. They can have a member or two members of their family dedicate 2 hours a week or a month, depending on their schedules. So there's that very vital contribution of volunteering for these organizations. They can contribute small sums, $2 a month, $10 a month, whatever they can afford. Other people can afford more, but everybody needs to commit. We have 192,000 households just in the city of Fresno and the city of Clovis. If everybody would just do something and realize how important it is to invest in nutrition, because if we invest in this nutrition, our unborn, our newly born children, and our young children will get that that first learning. They'll have normal brain development. They'll be able to learn in preschool and kindergarten. And as they go through our educational system, that nutrition will be there all along. So when they become juniors and seniors in high school, if they get into a project that really inspires them, even a student who has been only an indifferent student all his life or her life, that person may just really be energized by a certain project, and then they start really taking off. And those are the people that I'm thinking of that go to places like Bitwise Industries, and they get into software. They become very proficient at writing software and know how to sense a certain need for a certain kind of software and market their software well. Those are the kinds of people that we can grow right here in Fresno if we give them nutrition. So I think an investment in nutrition has a very big reward, having these young professionals who are very motivated staying here in Fresno.
Yeah, and certainly this is a problem that's not, as Andy said, just Fresno, also with rural communities, also in Tulare and Kings County and Kern County as well. Andy, what is the most effective way that people can help? There's a lot of different things that people can do. You talked about trying to look at how organization can make the biggest impact and trying to do things in different ways simply by maybe asking in a different way than you have before. What is the one way that you or the ways, I should say, that you feel people out there who are listening right now can help most effectively your organization?
Sure. Joe, the easiest way, and it's one that's always just you're a little bit cautious because you don't want it to sound so mercenary. But really for us, the best way is a financial investment. If they were to go to our website, communityfoodbank.net, hit the Donate Now button. You think about the fact that we distribute 38 million pounds of food on about a $5 million budget. So we can move a lot of food based on having cash available. And it really rings back to something, and I should have mentioned very early in the discussion, because when Phil and I first met to have this discussion, a lot of this discussion was about the fact that the food banking world and the food access and food support world tends to be more reactionary in the sense that we distribute what is given to us. And part of what Phil's data tells us is these are the things, and he mentioned just a moment ago, that there are things we need to be intentional about going and getting. And we need to shift our model from being simply reactionary to building in that proactive component. How do you go if folks aren't going to donate dairy products just because the economics and marketing orders and those things that get in the way, then we need to figure out a way to go access it from another manner, whether it's financial donations or whatever that looks like. So because if the need out there is dairy products for young children, you know, we can pass out everything else and they're still missing that dairy need. So one of the things that's always been exciting for us with Phil's work and the Hunger Count work is the fact that it's opening up to not just when and where, but what. And really helping us narrow down that as we become proactive in how we access and distribute food, we're making sure that we're getting the right food on the tables and the right food distributed to the families that are in need. So that was a big part of Phil's work that really has helped us a lot.
You can find the data as part of the Fresno Hunger Count survey online at hunger-count.org. You can also find the Community Food Bank and connect with them online for donations at communityfoodbank.net. We've been talking with Andy Souza of the Community Food Bank and Philip Arrow of Fresno Hunger Count. Thank you so much for joining us today, and happy Thanksgiving to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Joe, thank you very much.